The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And yes, we have a very special guest on the show, a kind of invitation out of the blue through some certain, I don't know, connections through online, searches to find interviewees and so on and so forth. Anyway, the very special guest for this episode 196, her name's Angie Hernandez. She's a certified hypnotherapist based in Indiana, up in the United States, but she has strong connections to Colombia, and that's why she's on the show. And interestingly enough, when we got in touch, she said, well, I can talk to you about Colombia in the 1970s. And I think many of us here don't have any idea what Colombia would have been like in the 1970s. So Angie on the line from Indiana, welcome on Columbia Calling.
Hey, hi, friends. I'm so glad to be here.
You're most welcome. Angie, tell us a little bit about how you ended up in Colombia back in the 1970s.
I decided I wanted to be an exchange student, and I kind of applied at a late date. So I was to leave in January, and the company assigned me to go to Japan, which was out of my reach financially. Mm-hmm. So they switched me to Colombia. I didn't know anything about it. And zoom off, I went in January to Cúcuta.
And this year, the exact year was which year?
1975. The 100th anniversary of the great earthquake in Villa de Rosario.
That's right. 1975. So a year before I was born, you were down there in Cúcuta. So you got this exchange program, which took you down to Cúcuta. I mean, it's not a normal place to go, I would say, a frontier city. It's a lot of coming and going. At the moment, Cúcuta is quite an interesting place to visit, especially with the issues going on in Venezuela. But so yes. How were you received in Cúcuta?
Well, I thought very well. There were probably around 10 students from different programs there, and I saw a couple of them occasionally.
Okay.
The first family I was with, a family came and picked me up, and I just assumed they were the right one. I didn't speak Spanish, and they didn't speak English. And I saw a few students, and we were where we were living there was closer to where some of the other students lived. Uh-huh. I soon found out, just by seeing some mail on a table, that wasn't the family at all that I was assigned to. And the only some English-speaking person wasn't at the house at the time. But when she finally arrived, we scoped it out. The first family had changed their mind to keep a student. So this family took me on. And within about a month, they also changed their mind. So I was sent to another family who I didn't know. But it turned out great. And I really considered them my second family. We still stay in contact.
I love this idea that you just sort of, I mean, I guess you flew into Cúcuta, or it wasn't overland. Yes. Yeah, you flew into Cúcuta and you were picked up by a family who wasn't meant to pick you up. You live with them for a month. You're just like the sort of friendly homeless student.
That's kind of how I do things in my life. I just like decide. And I say, okay, I'm going on faith, and that's what I do.
Well, this is great. But then after a month, they didn't want you. I mean, it wasn't down to your behavior, I imagine. It was just
I think it was really they didn't want a student in their house. It was kind of a change to their, even though I thought I was trying to blend in well, it was a change to their routine. And mm-hmm. I think they just weren't ready for a student.
Yeah.
And the other family, they had a student who wanted to go, she had applied, but this plan required they keep a student for her to be able to go.
Yeah.
It was a much better fit for me.
Definitely. And so then you moved to another family, and then this is like your second family. But of course, you spoke no Spanish when you arrived in Cúcuta. How long did it take you to learn Spanish?
I would say within about 3 months, I wasn't a great speaker, but I could defend myself. I could take a walk and go buy stamps. I could purchase things. You know, I could get along.
Uh-huh.
I was there 6 months. When I came home, I was getting ready the summer before my senior year in high school. They put me in a level 5 class because I needed grammar. I had no grammar. Even now, my grammar is kind of rusty.
Mm.
But so I did okay.
Yeah, well, I think 3 months, I mean, it's pretty intensive, too. So, I mean, it's a testament to the immersion process. You sink or swim.
Yeah, of course. I like to talk, so yeah. I have to.
And Cúcuta, no one's going to speak English, really. I mean, out there, it's tough out there.
No, the family I stayed with, no one spoke English there. And I didn't really see English speakers any longer in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So I really was immersed in, and I carried my dictionary, got a big fat dictionary, carried it everywhere. I looked things up. In the beginning, I took like a Reader's Digest article, and I wrote down all the words I didn't know, which was most of them.
Mm.
And I worked on my own vocabulary, and I worked hard at it. I had tremendous headaches every day for 13 months.
Well, I'm sure you slept very well each night.
The music is what really taught me Spanish.
Oh, yeah?
Because I love music, and when I found there was a song that I liked, when I found I could finally sing along with the lyrics, I was getting it.
Yeah.
Because I could pick up the speech quicker in the rhythm of the music, and I began to dream in Spanish, so I knew I'd come around.
Yeah, you know you're getting somewhere that way when you start to agree. It's when your Spanish is your go-to language in an argument with your spouse, that then you know you're fluent.
That's so true.
Tell me something then. In 1975, Cúcuta, 6 months. How was Cúcuta? How was Colombia in 1975? I mean, I have ideas from history books and old movies and so on, but I mean, I'd love you to describe a little bit to my listeners out here.
I mean, it was safe enough that we could walk everywhere. We walked miles and miles. Uh-huh. I mean, we walked everywhere from our neighborhood down to El Centro, to the movie theater, everywhere, and it was safe to do that. Now, late at night, you know, girls probably shouldn't do that. Uh-huh. And there were soldiers around. You didn't really want to confront or talk to a soldier. Honestly, if I saw soldiers together, they usually are in two or threes. You would cross the street, mm-hmm, to stay out of their way.
Yeah.
But in things, like the first venture I took walking by myself, my necklace was ripped off my neck and stolen.
Okay.
I didn't know about that kind of a society, so I had to learn that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it was as bad as like the last time I went, where, you know, we just didn't wear rings, we didn't wear earrings, we didn't wear any of that. And we could do that then. I could walk everywhere safely, shop, go downtown, walk around different neighborhoods in my kind of class area. And it was great. People were friendly to me. If we took a walk in the evening, people sat outside. We greeted one another in the neighborhood. It was,
mm-hmm,
nice.
Yeah, very family, very neighborly. And the most recent time that you've visited Cúcuta was what year?
Oh, let's see. My daughter's 30, and she was 3 at the time.
So it's a few years ago, 27 years ago.
It was during some bad times.
Yeah.
I didn't feel safe. My children were small. I was having nightmares that they were being kidnapped. And we didn't walk around places in our neighborhood or anything. Mm-hmm. We stayed behind the gates. And even when we took a trip up to Chinacota, mm-hmm, and there was a stop by a group that I felt very unsafe.
Yeah.
I didn't want to take the kids back.
That's, we're looking at, is that 1980? 1980, around then?
No,
it's later. Later, 1990. Sorry, I think 1990.
Yeah, that sounds
good. Yeah, that's much better. 1990,
right,
but
because she was born in 87.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's a really bad time. Of course, a really bad time. And you were stopped by an armed group.
Yes.
Oof, no.
We were with Colombians, and they got us through. But I was very scared. And even in Chinacota, it was in a little village of cabins. walled gate, and I still even felt a little nervous there. Now, the next time my husband went by himself, he also described he got afraid when they went up to Chinakota and stuff. So I haven't been back since then. Wow. But I think what I've seen in the past few years from his visits and our family and friends, I think now I would be okay to go.
I think, you know,
I would love to go back.
Yeah. But this is an interesting thing. So hang on. Your links to Cúcuta run incredibly deeply. You're married to a Cúcuteño.
Yes, that's true.
Now, is this someone you met?
They're called by other names too, but we won't say that.
And is this someone you met during your exchange period?
No, I left. My family business was concessions in the summer, so I had to get back at the end of my 6 months. So then I did my senior year, and I think that year my brother and I went for a Christmas visit. We went for a month. Wow. And then I did my senior year at school in the summer, and then I didn't go into university in the fall for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. And I decided, instead of just working, I wanted to go back.
Yeah.
So I went back until the following June, and I met him right the day I got there.
Really?
Yeah. And it was a thing where I didn't have a visa to stay and he didn't have a visa to go. So like I did as an exchange student, we said, what the heck, let's just get married and see where it leads. And what a 2 weeks ago was our 40th anniversary.
Well, congratulations, 40th anniversary, and you got married in Cúcuta.
Actually, we crossed the border into San Antonio, Venezuela, and we got there.
So you sort of eloped to Venezuela.
Yeah, we did.
40th anniversary.
It was a little easier. Yeah, I think it was. I think the thing was he had to have a. At 19, he had to have a written permission from a parent, which he didn't think he could get. So if we crossed there, he could get written permission from his grandmother, and that was good enough.
Wow. Wow. Incredible. Incredible story. And you're together to this day, 40th anniversary. You met in Cúcuta and stuff. So, I mean, your bonds to Cúcuta are incredibly strong, but as you say, you've not been since 1990. But your husband goes back, and what are his reflections on going back? I imagine he goes once every couple of years or once every year.
He does. Right now, his main family has a home in, I think it's Villa de Rosario. I think they have like neighborhoods there now where they got some construction and they have a home. His grandmother, who has Alzheimer's, is in one of the houses where his sister mostly takes care of him. Mm-hmm. Another sister helps. And then, so he goes and stays there, which is a little removed from Cúcuta. Normal, so he can't like walk into town anymore. He has to be driven. So he kind of is quiet there. His dad passed away 2 years ago, and he was able to go and be with him for a little bit. His dad did live in El Centro de Cúcuta.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we would stay there and probably in Bogota a little. He has quite a lot of family in Bogota.
Well, a lot of people migrating to the cities, of course, the big cities, mm-hmm. and with the issues in, you know, again, Venezuela. And honestly, Bogota, Bucaramanga, Cúcuta, Cartagena, Barranquilla have all become little Venezuelas as well because of everything. And all Cucuteños have family in Venezuela. So I imagine your husband has had a flood of family members coming back across the border.
In the family I stayed with, that I consider my family, one of the sisters married and lived. I don't remember which city she was in. She was the youngest sister, so I wasn't as close to her.
Mm.
But I believe she's still there. But, that border, we were right on the border. Yeah. That was always an issue. At one time, they were very wealthy, and they were encouraged to come in and spend those bolivars in Cúcuta. That was the happy days that people talk about still. And now it's kind of the opposite, where people are trying to cross that dry riverbed at night. And
it's the people and then the people bringing the gasoline across to sell into Colombia and then selling there's all sorts of banditry on that border. It's absolutely terrifying.
It's always been that way. It's just it's a little bit different now than it was before.
Yeah, it's true. And of course, and the madman in charge next door likes to blame the Colombians for all the ills, but anyone with 2 cents to rub together upstairs knows that there's something else going on there. Well, we're going to take
a short... for their sakes that things turn around.
Yeah, definitely. Me too. I mean, we lament incredibly the situation that's going on, what we see in the news daily here about Venezuela, and of course the people flooding into Colombia. But like I think is that, you know, during the really bad years, perhaps when you were last in Colombia in 1990, they were really bad years, and Venezuela was sheltering so many Colombians. So it's now our turn to take in the Venezuelans as our sister country.
Yes, absolutely. We have a symbiotic relationship there.
Yeah.
I say we in the royal we.
Well, I say we. I'm a Colombian. I'm not a Colombian, but I'm a Colombian. Yeah. Well, I think we'll continue on in. And so tell me a little bit about, let's say, this Cúcuta connection and so on in 1990s. You've got this proximity to Colombia. You've not come down for a while. You will come down. But tell us about the 1970s. When we talk about the conflict in Colombia, the sort of agreed historical dates, 1964, but that's more in the interior of the country around Mariquita and in Tolima and these areas. But up in Cúcuta, was there any feeling of these issues going on? Were people talking about it in 1975 or what's happening or did they not look to the interior of the country?
I wasn't hearing about it, but remember, I was a teenager.
Yeah.
So that could have been a little over my head. I remember seeing a movie that I was appalled at one point that was about it.
Yeah.
Machetes, and yeah, it was probably by today's standards, maybe that wouldn't have been bad, but it was for me at the time.
Yeah.
No, not really. I wasn't so much tied into the political, except maybe a little bit of what was happening with the money exchange between Venezuela and Cúcuta, because every Cucuteño had part of their income influenced by that
situation.
So it was talked about a lot.
And I think you said something so interesting and so poignant just a few minutes ago as well, is like, you know, the border's always been an issue. Of course it has. And that's, I think people today forget that. It's like it's always been there. It's always been a flow of either legal or that gray area, illegal, not just, let's say, the illicit products, but products that people need to live with, you know.
It was always said on our side that Venezuela would starve without Colombia because they didn't raise food.
Mm.
At least that was the attitude of the day. But the attitude of the day was also Colombians were quite jealous of Venezuelans because there was a lot of money there.
Yeah.
And they saw a lot of wealthy people there. And maybe some felt they got their comeuppance.
Well, 1975, Venezuela was the number one oil exporter at that time. Yeah. They were very wealthy, but the money didn't go where it should have gone, of course. And as always, Latin America, it's the same old story.
Yes.
So I'm sure there was a joke.
Sad to me, because you hear a lot of criticism, at least of the United States. In my day, I did. Mm. I don't know if it's that way now. But they, you know, talked a lot about how we exploited them and gringos, this and that. And I finally said, you know, you had the same opportunity. You have a bigger country, a bigger continent than we do. You could have grouped together. You had meetings between the countries. You could have united. But they never could get along.
Yeah, I take this with a grain of salt. The exploitation and so on. It's a one day tanker. An oil tanker takes a day from Maracaibo up to Texas. I mean, you know, the U.S. and Venezuela have very strong links, and the U.S. remains the number one buyer of Venezuelan oil. So I always think there's much more to it than this. And, you know, in the streets, the anti-gringo sentiment is, it's just a bit worn, isn't it? It's like, yes, okay, there are CIA operatives, and yes, there's a war on drugs, and yes, there's all these things. But I think under someone else's auspices, this would all take place anyway. I find it quite hard, and you know, this anti-U.S. sentiment that of course, Maduro is drumming up, because it's the only way he can possibly try and cling on to power, and he claims that Colombia is responsible for his economic situation, and it's Colombian paramilitary groups, and nobody here believes it. I mean, that's the thing. I don't think anybody outside of Venezuela believes it. And you're just like, oh, come on, you know. And it is. I mean, in terms of anti-gringo sentiment, was it really strong when you were in Cúcuta?
It everyone you met had an opinion.
Yeah,
it was, because at the time, who else was there to blame?
Sure.
You know, some politician is always going to look for someone to blame to get a foothold. That's true. It's true here.
Yeah.
It's true everywhere.
Yeah.
And here, the people always wanted to, and you think of us as monkeys that live in trees. I said, well, I don't see you living in trees, so I don't really think that. And are you all, you're all like that, right? You all have big houses and there's lots of money. And I said, look, I saw it in the movies. I know it must be true. I would say, well, you know, we made those movies and we don't really like to go to a movie to see everyday life. We want to see something else. So you can imagine that those are not.
We want escapism from the movies.
Yeah. I don't think they ever thought of it that way.
Mm.
But it's a, oh gosh, I miss it a lot. I miss it a lot. I'll be glad to go back.
Yeah, no, I can understand. I mean, you some really formative years of your of you know, and back in the 1970s, high school and later were spent there. I can fully understand this attachment that you have to Cúcuta and Colombia. Of course, not I mean, everywhere is different in Colombia. I for one don't really know Cúcuta at all. I've never been. I keep meaning to go to do a piece about the border and so on and so forth, but that I, you know, I have quite a feisty Colombian wife who won't. She's probably not too happy with me going out that way.
So, I get it. Yes. I get it. It's not an easy trip for you either.
No, well, I'd just fly straight to Cúcuta, but from Bogota. But equally, but I'm really interested in seeing places like Pamplona and Villa del Rosario and learning more about the history as well, because I think that would tie that in. And I think that's something I'd like to say. I mean, you were aware then, once you spent time, of how historic this region is. I mean, now we just think of it as a border, but it is so historic.
Yes. And you talk about Pamplona. I used to love trips up sometimes on the weekends to Pamplona.
Yeah.
And it turns out, yes, because it's a beautiful town, a beautiful little town. And I love the climate. I like a cooler climate. So that was nice for me.
Yeah.
And it turns out now my husband's family, one of his aunts, they have very large families. His aunts married one of the, there's a big panaderia up there, big rich one, well-known family established. He was one of that family. So there's some kind of back-end connection there as well.
Well,
but I used to love to go up there.
Yeah, to go into a more temperate climate and just a big university town.
Yeah, internos.
Yeah, definitely,
the
definitely.
Kids would go for boarding school.
That's right. And so Pamplona and Villa Rosario. But then, I mean, you learned about the history. I mean, you learned about Bolivar and of course, all of the Ruta del Libertador along this area.
Someone, I won't say I'm an expert, but I like to study history as well, so I learned what I could. Sure.
And you know, let's say I know that you've got connections, obviously strong connections up in Indiana, and you have responsibilities. But would you ever consider coming down again to Cúcuta for an extended period of time?
I have to see. We're getting our first grandchild this October, so I don't know.
That's the end of it. There's no.
Well, and they already live in Boston, so they're not close by us.
That's far.
So any free time that we have, we'll probably want to go see her.
Yeah.
And eventually, my mother will be 91 soon here. And when she passes, I would like to sell up and move closer to my daughter, who's married and lives in Indianapolis. So I don't know. I used to think, oh, it'd be nice to be there a few months every year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Leaving behind your grandchildren. Hmm.
That's a tough one. You see, my mother-in-law down here has only got the one grandchild, who's my son, and you know, she lives for him. I mean, she would move the earth for him. There would be no distance.
I can understand.
So, well, congratulations on that. I can understand it. But, you know, to come to escape maybe the winters for a month or something.
I like the winter, so.
Okay, I hate winter.
I didn't think I did until I lived away and I kind of missed it.
It took you living in Cúcuta.
You know, in Cúcuta, and probably all Colombia, is like there's no exact season. When the sundown comes, boom, it's gone.
Yeah.
It's not much of a sundown or sunrise. It just happens quick. And it's the same every day. It happens about the same time every day because you're on the equator.
Yeah.
And I miss the change of seasons.
You know, the only thing I miss is autumn. That's the only thing I miss.
Love it.
I love autumn. I hate winter. I absolutely can't. And spring doesn't do anything for me either. I'm fine with the rest of it.
I'm not right now. Summer. I'm not so crazy about summer.
Oh, it must be pretty hot up there right now, huh?
It's not too bad today, but it's pretty humid. Yeah.
Because my...
It gets hot. Yeah. Next month more so.
Really? My stepmother's from Ohio, so not too far away as the crow flies. And she's up there visiting her sister, and she's just saying, the humidity. I remember I was there in 1996.
We were out west then, but... And we moved up, we lived in Las Vegas 2 years, and then we moved to Flagstaff, Arizona. So we were up in the mountains, it was nice and cool, mostly dry. I loved it.
Yeah, definitely. But Cucuta
can get mighty hot.
Yes, this can get mighty hot indeed. And so I'm just curious, I mean, you know, maybe you said you might think of coming down this year or next year, maybe for a little visit.
Probably next year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think
it would be. I have conference in August, and then a grandchild will probably see at Thanksgiving, and then by then you're into the new year. And
So much planning to do. And you know,
it's awesome.
It's not a short trip either. I mean, guess you go to Atlanta or something, or to Houston to catch a flight then, and
we'll probably end up going to Indianapolis, Miami. Or I think I saw that there's a direct American from Indianapolis to Bogota.
Really?
I believe so. I'm going to have to check again.
Okay, I have to check. I don't know anything about that, but that would be amazing because it would connect central United States to Colombia, which would be amazing. I mean, that really open up the boundaries and stuff. Well,
Colombians are everywhere, so they're ready to travel. We know Colombians in our area, and we're in kind of a rural place.
Yeah? Is there a big Colombian community in Indiana?
No, they're everywhere, honestly. You know, I mean, my husband drove with my mother when she would come out west for the winters when we lived out there.
Yeah.
We always had someone ride with her because she wanted to drive. So he rode back with her one time. They stopped for the night in a hotel, and he heard some speech off in the distance. He knew right away it was a Colombian. Always tell.
But talking about your husband, how was his, let's say, culture adaptation up to the U.S. at the beginning then?
It was a culture shock. He came, and my family, because we work as concessionaires in the summer, we were at the state fair. So he flew in and had to go right to work. All he came was a suitcase. He had a few pairs of pants, and you know, everything else was left behind. That was pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to go right to work. And then he was short a little bit to graduate high school. So we put him right into the local high school, but he didn't have the language skills.
Yep.
And I had a part-time job that I got at a factory. And finally I asked, my supervisor spoke a little Spanish. I forget why. But I said, look, could I give my job to my husband because he can't find work anywhere?
Yeah.
And he said, okay. And so he stayed there 9 years.
It just all sort of falls into place for you, I have to say.
Somebody's looking out for me.
Someone's looking out for you. Fantastic. It's wonderful. I mean, you really, it's a sacrifice on your part, and it's a sacrifice on his part, too. I mean, it was a match. Yeah. Really, it was something came together there, let's say.
Yeah, it worked really well.
And how many children do you have then?
We have two. A son and a daughter.
Okay, fantastic.
And one's in Indy, and one's in Boston, and... Yeah.
And they don't. And do they? Let's say, value their Colombian heritage.
I think fiercely. They don't speak Spanish, but they're fierce about loving Colombia.
Oh, really? And the yellow shirts on and
oh yeah. They were pretty excited because I think it was 2 years ago when Colombia was going in. It was in the Cup Finals. They played in Chicago against Argentina. Yeah,
Brazil or Uruguay. Uruguay. They beat.
I don't think so. Who played a short time ago? It was the same team.
Yeah, they played Brazil and lost in the Cup. And they beat Uruguay in the game before that. Hello.
And so they did. He got tickets, and my son and daughter-in-law flew in from Boston at the last minute. He drove down to Indianapolis. and then back up to Chicago with my daughter, and they went to the game together.
Excellent. So, but it's nice to know that there's people looking out for Colombia, because obviously the image presented in the press is all of this narcos stuff and so on, and it gets a little bit tiring for those of us living here.
Well, sure it is. But, you know, people shift as they get to know you.
Mm-hmm. Well, fantastic. Well, Angie, let me just say thank you so much for sharing your, you know, this personal experience that you had down coming to Cúcuta by chance. You were going to, maybe, you know, if you'd got the money together, you would have been in Japan and the story would have been completely different.
It would have.
And
I think that would have been harder.
So I thank you for this and telling us about your experiences and an insight into 1975 Colombia. It's fascinating, because I have no image in my mind. I see bell bottoms and long hair is all I think of.
What kind of word? Yeah. I had very long hair, and thank God they got me to cut it because it was so hot.
Yeah, I bet. Well, let me just say congratulations on this, your 40th anniversary, your Cucuteño, and of course, congratulations on the upcoming birth of your grandchild for October. I mean, this is great, and I love to hear from people who have so much love for Colombia, and you know, so much. And I'm glad that your children are fiercely patriotic while not speaking Spanish.
Yeah. They don't speak Spanish, but they love Colombia.
Right.
There are many other people here you could interview too.
Well, thank you again. We've been speaking to Angie Hernandez, who's up there in Indiana, and she's been talking about her experiences in Colombia and of course her links to Colombia, all the way from Indiana to Cúcuta. Who'd have thought? I mean, it's not so it's been a wonderful show. Nice chat with Angie Hernandez, episode 196 of Colombia Calling. And we are, of course, you can reach us on Twitter at Colombia Calling, Facebook at Colombia Calling. We're also the email address colombiacalling@gmail.com if you want to get in touch. I'll be back next week with another fascinating person on the show talking everything to do with Colombia. And yes, if you want to get in touch, please get in touch. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.